It's our weekly baseball podcast with Kevin Gorman from Trib Live. Kevin, of course, covers the Pittsburgh Pirates for us at Trib Live. You can check out his work daily covering the Bucks as they get ready for a three-game series against the Arizona Diamondbacks to close out the first half of the season, the unofficial first half of the season, as we get ready for the All-Star Game in Seattle. By the way, if you've been tracking us on the podcast side, want to let you know, you might have missed this announcement. As of July the 18th, the Breakfast with Benz podcast will be expanding its reach. Content's not going to change. You can still get it every week at Trib Live, every day at Trib Live, but the podcast itself will be part of the Fans First Sports Network. If you're someone who listens on a podcast platform of your choosing, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc., you can go and find the new feed on all major platforms like that now. Just type in Breakfast with Benz, or you can search Fans First Network and resubscribe. Automatically get all of our latest podcasts for free, or you can just continue to listen on the Trib Live site. Kevin, the Pirates end up losing 3 of 4 in Los Angeles. Now they get the Diamondbacks. A tough way to end the season, to be sure, against two really good teams from the West, but they just need a little something positive in Arizona to get to the break, don't they?
I would certainly think that that would be beneficial to the Pirates, not just for the way they end the first half, but also for the way they go into the trade deadline. You don't want to be limping into the break and then coming out of the break knowing that you need to go on a run here to avoid being sellers. And that may be inevitable either way. The Pirates may realize, you know, I think the talk when they were going amid that 10-game losing streak, the talk is like, well, nobody had us better than, you know, fourth place anyway. And, you know, that was kind of talk you don't want to hear from the front office, as if to say, hey, you know, we're just happy to be where we were, you know, in April and early May. So that's a little disheartening. But I think it would be beneficial to the Pirates, especially some of the guys that would be, you know, trade candidates, that they finish the first half strong and start the second half the same way and kind of keep themselves in contention. Because what you're seeing right now is there's some separation in the standings where the, you know, the Reds are on a 5-game winning streak and have pulled away, and they're 8.5 games ahead of the Pirates right now.
Yeah, it's not just the 10-game losing streak that has stretched out to 6-17 over the last 23. And, you know, it looks like from time to time, Kevin, if you go back and just look at what they've done since they started to get on that skid, they played the Cardinals, they stopped the bleeding, but they didn't gain traction. They played the Padres, they swept the Padres, but they didn't gain traction. They're just not able to sustain like they did in April.
No, and I think what's really become evident as we get away from April, the further and further we get away, is just how, you know, fantastic their pitching, especially their starting pitching, was in that first month of the season. And we're seeing, I think, the pitching catching up to them right now. You take into consideration, and this is not me making excuses for the Pirates, but take into consideration that they came into the season believing that their rotation would be Mitch Keller, JT Brubaker, Vince Velasquez, you know, Rich Hill, and Ronzi Contreras, and that here we are, you know, not even at the All-Star break, and three of those guys are essentially not in the starting rotation at the moment, and two of them are lost for the season. And one of them, I might be more worried about the third guy, to be honest with you. As much as you know that JT Brubaker is going to have some time here, you know, both of these guys probably about a year before they're ready to return to being starting pitchers in the major leagues. You have to wonder whether Ronzi Contreras is going to be a guy that's going to be a starter, or if he's going to be a reliever, or if he's even going to be a major leaguer. He's got to get some things figured out. And the Pirates have to, you know, have to really kind of put a lot into this guy, because not only is he one of their top young pitchers, but he's really kind of the last hope of that Jameson Taillon trade working out as well. You know, it's, they gave up, you know, a guy who was at the time their top starter, and in return, you know, some of these guys that they've gotten haven't really panned out for them that much. You know, they've already lost Miguel Yajure. Kanan Smith and Jigba has been, looks like a solid player, but he's probably a fourth outfielder for the Pirates at best. And Michael Escoto was the guy that everybody thought, oh, this was the top prospect coming back in this draft. He's very young. And he hasn't really worked out very well for them just yet. So Contreras was the guy that, you know, that paid early dividends and looked like he was going to be one of their, you know, top half of the rotation guys. And his struggles are really raising alarms with the Pirates, not only because he's getting hit so hard, but also the downtick in the velocity and the concerns over his arm, given that I think he's already had one Tommy John surgery and he's had forearm issues the past couple seasons. There's a lot of things that are sounding bells with the Pirates and Rosie Contreras right now. And I think they made the right move by optioning him to Indianapolis and allowing him kind of the time and space to work things out before he is under that pressure of pitching in the major leagues again.
Kevin Gorman with us. At least they're catching the Diamondbacks at the right time. Arizona playing some of its worst ball of the year. I think they've got like 2 runs in their last 24 innings. They just got swept by the New York Mets. Shut out in their last game. 2-1 loss before that. The bench is cleared last night. They were blown out 9-0. It's just not going in the right direction for Arizona right now, and that corresponds with what the Dodgers just did to the Pirates, and all of a sudden in the National League West, the Dodgers are within a half game again.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in the Pirates, we can look at them and say, oh, well, you know, the Pirates played the Dodgers, you know, relatively close every game. They were in the games. But this was also a Dodgers team that lost Clayton Kershaw to the injured list and has had a couple other guys that have not been in the lineup that, you know, Chris Taylor being one, that are some concerns. You're not catching necessarily the Dodgers at their best, although they're playing very well. And the Pirates needed, you know, a big comeback to beat them in the one time they did. But I really think that, you know, that's the thing in this game is that the momentum swings. And I think the Pirates are playing good baseball right now. They may not be playing winning baseball, but they're not playing bad baseball like they were at the start of May. And they're not playing bad baseball like they were during that 10-game losing skid. This is a team that's playing a lot differently. And, you know, what I've been impressed by is how, you know, last night, I didn't even get to watch last night's game, but, you know, you look at what the first four guys in the lineup did, and they gave you zeros. They're getting production from some of the young guys and from some of the guys we're not expecting it from. And that's a little bit promising because I think you know that the guys in the top of the lineup are going to figure things out and that you're getting production from the guys you weren't expecting anything from is something that gives me a little bit of hope for this group right now.
All right, Kevin, let's talk draft. That's coming up on Sunday. Who do they want and who do they end up taking? Because I know that isn't necessarily going to be the same answer. It could be different guys. What's your take on where they're sitting right now with the number one pick?
Well, you know, when I was talking to scouts about the draft just a few weeks ago, everybody was saying Dylan Cruz is the guy. No brainer, 1-1. And all of a sudden, after the College World Series, the tide has shifted a little bit. And what everybody's saying now, and what I'm hearing quite a bit, is that Paul Skeens is the guy, the LSU 6'6" right-hander who throws 100-plus, has a wicked slider and a surprising change. This is the guy that's probably a generational pitcher. You're hearing him in the same vein as, you know, Steven Strasburg and Gerrit Cole, that he's, you know, as good of a college pitching prospect as Strasburg. And so, you know, in a lot of people's eyes, that's the no-brainer now. Dylan Cruz did nothing to drop off. It's just that he got surpassed by a guy who looks like an even better prospect. What I was hearing yesterday is that Dylan Cruz is your safe pick because you know he can hit. You know he's a dynamic outfielder. He's a guy that has, you know, has all the tools, although he's not necessarily a power hitter. Wyatt Langford from Florida is a power hitter who's not quite as polished as Cruz, but may have more upside. So I was hearing Cruz is a safe pick. But if you're looking for the guy that has potential superstardom in him, that might be Wyatt Langford. So I've heard those three names. I've also heard Max Clark's name for about a month and a half now, where people keep saying, oh, the Pirates really did their due diligence looking at these high school kids. They really liked Max Clark. I keep hearing people say you can't go wrong with any of the top five. In another year, in another draft, any of those guys would be the number one pick, maybe even last year, you know, where Jackson Holliday was the number one pick by the Orioles. But in this year, I think a lot of people think perception-wise that it's between Cruz and Skeens, and that anybody else is the Pirates kind of doing something outside the box. I don't know that it's that cut and dry. I think the Pirates could go outside the box and draft a Max Clark from Indiana, high school kid, and then decide, because this is a very deep draft where there, I had a guy tell me there was 30 plus or 30, I think he said there were 38 guys that he had first round values on, that they could perhaps try to convince somebody who was going to go to college to sign at an overslot bonus and go underslot at the number one pick. I don't really care for that. I think you should try to get the closest thing to a sure
Yeah,
thing.
I've never agreed with that. That feels to me like you're prioritizing the second guy more than your goals for the first.
Yeah, the thing about it is, I mean, if you go back, that's what the Pirates did in 21. They drafted Henry Davis, who everybody had as a top four or five guy. Not many people had him as the number one. And then they were able to get Bubba Chandler and Anthony Solometo, a pair of pitchers that were top 100 prospects who both had committed to college, and they got both of them drafted, signed them over slot. And now Anthony Solometo is a top 100 prospect. Bubba Chandler is a top 10 prospect for the Pirates. And they look like they're, they could be pitchers on the staff in a couple of years. They look like they're on the right trajectory. And you have Henry Davis, who's not a catcher right at the moment, but he's in the major leagues and he's hitting the ball. And so that doesn't look like a bad pick given the early returns that you're getting. Whether that the long returns or whether that's a good move, I don't know. We'll wait and see how Marcelo Mayer and Jordan Lawler pan out as shortstops at the major league level, because they're both at the double A level at the moment. So they're on a very fast trajectory as well. But I don't know that the Pirates, this is what I'm hearing, I don't know that the Pirates could go wrong with any of those five guys. They might do better with certain guys, one other than the other. But to me, the guy that probably addresses the top prospect in the draft and the position of need, and the guy that may have the earliest track to the majors and the highest upside all in one, is Paul Skenes.
Plus, he
And
should
we
be
know.
signable, right? I mean, isn't he represented by Davis's people?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of whether the Pirates want to spend to the full slot value. And some people say, well, they don't want to spend. First of all, they're going to spend every penny of their allotted bonus pool. They've done that every year. They're also willing to spend at or above slot value. Last year, they signed Tamar Johnson to $8 million, took him number four overall. So that's a misperception by fans who just, always believe that Bob Nutting does everything on the cheap. And most of the time, they're right. I'm not arguing that. It's just that there are examples where the Pirates don't do everything on the cheap. Maybe they felt like the guys that in 2021, that Henry Davis was just as good of a value for a much lesser price, and that they could spread the money around. Maybe they'll take the same thing this year, but I don't think you can go out and get a Paul Skenes type of guy any other way to your organization. I don't think you can draft a guy any other spot other than number one. I don't think you can sign a guy internationally that's going to be as ready for the major leagues. And Skenes is at least a year away. He's not joining the Pirates this season, but as close to the major leagues as Skenes is going to be. And I don't think you could trade for one or sign one in free agency for $10 million or less. So I think when you look at all of those things, I think the value is in Paul Skenes. Whether the Pirates want to take the injury risk is the big question mark. And when you think back to all the guys they've drafted in the first round, Gerrit Cole's the only one who really came out of there clean. You think back to, Brian Bullington. You think, they drafted Chris Benson number one overall. He never really lived up to it. They drafted Brian Bullington and immediately projected him as a mid rotation starter, and he never lived up to it. But they've had, guys like who was it? Sean Burnett and Bobby Bradley and
Well, Brian Bullington, who, by the way, is the Brian Bullington is in the MLB.com preview post from May about Max Clark, where they actually said that Clark is the best prospect to come out of the state of Indiana since Brian Bullington. I was just
Yeah,
like, oh,
well, that doesn't speak very well for Indiana,
oh no.
although you could make argument that guys have come out of the University of Indiana. I mean, that
Yeah.
there's been some good. Kyle Schwarber came out of the University of Indiana. That's where John Wehner played. The thing about the draft is, it's I think a lot of us we're starting to get caught up in the Major League Baseball draft as a spectacle, in the same vein as the NFL draft and the NBA draft. The difference is, whereas whoever is going number one overall in the NFL draft is going to be an instant impact player for the most part. Almost, it's almost foolproof. save a Jamarcus Russell or someone like that. Or in the NBA draft, you know that this guy is going to be an instant superstar, sometimes, you know, a generational superstar. In the Major League Baseball draft, you go back and look at them. That's not necessarily always the case. You go back and look at the guy that won the Golden Spikes Award and save the last couple years where, you know, Bryce Harper won it, even though he's a 17-year-old kid at a junior college. That's not necessarily the case that you're getting the best player in college baseball. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be the best player in the major leagues. That's the difference in this draft, where you're drafting high school kids and college juniors. And some of them are more pro-ready than others, and some of them have a higher ceiling than others. And that's the crapshoot that you're dealing with here. And that's why I think some teams don't want the burden of drafting number one overall, because if you're the Pirates and you're drafting number one overall, people are going to belittle you for the guy you didn't pick. If you pick Skeens, then they're going to say, oh, they should have picked Cruz. If you pick Wyatt Langford, who's a heck of a player, and you didn't draft Cruz, you're going to have to live that part of it down. If you're drafting number two, you just take the guy who didn't get drafted at number one, and you look pretty brilliant. And that's the hard part about this draft, is that there's five guys that are considered number one caliber guys, and there's two of them that are considered sure things. And if you draft one of the other, people can kind of say, okay, well, you know, they took a shot at, you know, the pitcher instead of the outfielder. We can live with that. And you're going to base it on it. But if you take one of the other three, one of the guys three through five, and you pass on Skeens and Cruz, you may never live that down.
Kev, thanks as always. Appreciate it. And we'll do it again in 2 weeks. Off next week, we'll be back at it for the return after they go. Well, actually, I take that back. They'll be out west the next time we catch up. But we'll do it in 2 weeks.
All right, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Gorman from The Trib covers the Pirates for us here at Breakfast of the Bens.